The stew didn't smell anywhere near as good as Rock's. Kaladin had been spoiled by the Horn Eater's cooking. Still, when one of the men went to fetch him a bowl, he found himself smiling. He settled onto a long wooden bench near a fidgety little ardent who was scribing glyph words onto a piece of cloth for the men. Kaladin instantly loved this place, and the state of the men spoke highly of High Marshal Azure.
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 70 and 71 of Oathbringer. If you haven't caught up on your reading or you've picked the wrong episode, I would suggest going back and making sure you get those things done. We are getting closer and closer here to the episodes that I think everyone's waiting for. We have two live reads coming out, and I think that you could probably figure out which chapters those are going to end up being if you've read the books before. So we are anxiously waiting those moments just as you are. And we are anxiously waiting for you to enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q. And you know, he knew Sadeus was involved somehow. It's Jack. What's up?
How are you today, sir?
I am very good. I have an apology to make to you right off the cuff. Right off the bat, I have to apologize.
Oh, interesting.
We potted.
What for?
The last couple episodes, we potted, and you were like, you know, it was during one of the last flashbacks.
Okay.
And this thing came up in the story where Dalinar was thinking about who could have been the High Prince that was involved with this rebellion in Rathalas.
Right, right.
And you were like, what if it's Sadeus? And then right. I was like, it can't be Sadeus. He's part of the three best friends. They grew up together. We definitely know it's not Sadeus and it's not Dalinar. And I was like completely veering you away from it. And it wasn't to try to get you off the scent.
Right.
I actually completely forgot that Sadeus was involved. Like,
you did?
My memory fucking failed me in the moment. And I kind of was just riffing and I was.
So you were just like.
And I was like, there's no way it's Sadeus. Are you kidding me? And like, I don't know what it was that how I forgot this.
Right.
It's kind of an important reveal here in the second chapter.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So I felt bad that I, like, didn't, like, nurture your theory as opposed to, like, really fucking just, you know, raise hell and burn it to the ground. Like, so I apologize for having a bad memory on this one.
It makes complete sense.
Yeah.
You know, this is the rift.
Yeah.
But again, similarly to my criticisms with regards to, and I know if this is, again, this me, you know, beating a dead horse or whatever you want to call
it. Here we go. Is this Navonigate again or?
No, it's not Navonigate.
Oh, okay.
Navonigate? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
funny, bro.
Yeah, it's
That's
really,
really
good,
funny.
Yeah.
No, I've let go of the Navani thing.
Yeah, the fandom is very pleased to hear that you're on Navani's
side
let
now.
Go. Yeah, yeah. They love it. They love it. Yeah.
Okay. But okay, there is a caveat, but anyway,
okay.
there's always going to be, there's going to be some kind of cravat.
Yeah.
Or
it's just a necktie thing you wear.
I wanted more, I want more of the backstory with Dalinar and Sadeus. I want more of the buddy-buddy. It's the same complaint I had with Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Yeah.
With regards to episodes 1, 2, and 3, I know it's a film series, but still, I just want more of the establishment of care between the two characters before the betrayal.
Right.
So, I just want more, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel, unfortunately, I just don't feel that Oathbringer delivered let's say, on that, where I felt a sense of like loving Zadius, let's
right.
say, before right. this rift.
Right.
Now, maybe Brandon felt it wasn't necessary to develop it in that way. And perhaps he's the master, so he's right about that.
You're right, though, in the regard of Dalinar, Gavilar, and Sadeas being really tight and being like kind of best friends. He's told us, not shown us. And normally he shows, not tells, right? Like normally he'll show moments. Yeah. Like a good example of this is Adolin imprisoning himself for Kaladin after the fight, right? He is showing us how good of a friend Adolin can be and hopefully how close they will become through those actions. Like even just like a couple of chapters ago, Kaladin was like, he did imprison himself for me. Like this guy is a good person. So that's an example of him showing us, not telling us. Whereas with the friendship with the three men, he's telling us that they've had a really close friendship their whole lives,
right?
But not showing us in these flashbacks, unfortunately. So,
no, and that's my only thing is I just wish it was a closer thing before this kind of betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay. I mean, it's still really great. I was not necessarily surprised, but then I was also concocting all kinds of other alternative theories as he was having this conversation with Tanalan.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, what? Like, who's betraying who here? Like, is Dalinar being set up?
Did you understand what like the subterfuge that was happening there, where Tanalan's like, well, maybe actually we've always had this plan,
right?
Because I think the first time I read it like years ago, I think I thought I missed a beat, and this had always been the plan. I didn't really catch the wink, wink. We're making up this plan right now,
right?
Until my reread,
right.
You know what I mean? Like I thought that maybe I had missed a beat, but that was years ago. Like so did you kind of, you saw it, right? You saw the whole like, well, maybe we can come up with a plan right now that alleviates me from any bloodshed. And this was always planned between Gavilar and I to be able to suss out who the High Prince was.
Who the High Prince was, right?
Right?
Yeah.
So you saw it right away, though, right? You saw that they were just kind of coming up with it on the cuff, not...
On the cuff,
yeah,
that's
okay,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
But for a moment there, I was wondering, okay, well, where is this going? Like, because as I'm reading it line by line, I was wondering if Dalinar was going to be betrayed.
By his
brother and Sadeas.
Oh, by Gavilar.
Is where I was going.
Oh,
I was
thinking that there was another layer to it.
Yes.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, like, what is this rift? Is the rift like, because I was thinking that the rift was going to be ultimately between Dalinar and Evie.
Right.
But like Sanderson likes to do, it can become a rift that explains so many other things as well. It could be this rift, obviously, between him and Sadeas, but it could be between him and his brother.
Right.
And I thought, well, which one is it going to be, or how many of them is it going to be?
I like how you automatically decided that there's a duality in the word rift, and now you're looking for the rift between people as opposed to the place being nicknamed the rift.
Right.
And you immediately are like, there's got to be a duality to this word. Like, so where is the rift, right?
Yeah. Where is the rift?
Like,
Well, and there are multiple rifts going on here, but okay, so let's jump into chapter 70.
Yeah.
High Marshal. Now, is it Azure or Azure?
I've said Azure, but
Azure. Okay, yeah. How is it said in the
Azure? I think.
Azure?
I think it's Azure. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so something is happening to the sibling. Is the way that this starts the little cryptic drawer reading third zircon. Something is happening to the sibling. I agree this is true, but the division among the Knights Radiant is not to blame. Our perceived worthiness is a separate issue. So, the sibling.
Yeah.
Do we yet know what this is about?
The last one that we had kind of gave us another hint. Let me see if I can find it here real quick here.
Because this was Stormfather and his siblings, right?
The last couple that we've read have to do with the Radiance leaving the tower and the tower's function is not working anymore.
Right.
It says, my research into the cognitive reflection of Spren at the tower has been deeply illustrative. Some thought that the sibling had withdrawn from men by intent, but I find counter to that theory. And then the next one says, the wilting of plants and general cooling of air is disagreeable, yes, but some of the tower's functions remain in place. The increased pressure, for example, persists. And then this last next one here is, something is happening to the sibling. I agree this is true, but the division among Knights Radiance is not to blame. Our perceived worthiness is a separate issue. So it sounds like there's either two different things going on or the same thing going on, which is the Knights Radiance are leaving Urithiru,
right,
and Urithiru is shutting down, and they think that the sibling might have something to do with it.
Right.
But we're not sure what this
means.
We're
not really sure yet.
No. Right. Okay. All we know is that the Stormfather, you pointed this out, that the Stormfather said he had two siblings.
Two siblings.
Which
That's right.
could be bonded by a bondsmith. But we don't know who or where those siblings are. And in the past, it looks like a sibling was involved somehow with the Knights Radiant and maybe Urithiru as well.
Yeah, I was also with the whole duality thing too, like reading the sibling thing, Stormfather, of course, but, you know, wondering if it's about Dalinar and Gavilar, right? Just sort of the way it sort of translates.
Something is happening to the sibling. Yeah, I can see how you could read that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The Walls Guard's barracks smelled like home to Kaladin. So this is definitely a Kaladin chapter meeting. Mm-hmm. So he was tasked with this to basically investigate and find out more about this this High Marshal Azur. This was his true home. Was smelling leather and boiling stew, crowded men and weapon oil. There were spheres on the walls, white and blue. And he was in a large common room filled with tables, a few armorers sewing jerkins of uniforms. Others were sharpening weapons, a rhythmic calming sound. These were the noises and scents of an army well-maintained. So I just like the setup here. And I like it when Kaladin feels at home.
Me too.
So it's good. And what I love about this scene is that he feels at home, and then he feels so at home that he doesn't notice a subtle little detail here.
Yeah, that's right, eh?
That he's surrounded by light eyes.
Right. Yeah, he never, like, he didn't even notice when he first walked into it.
Right.
Because light eyes, traditionally, don't act the way these men are acting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or at least to his understanding of what a light eyes is.
Right.
Right?
I think it's a great lesson for Kaladin.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So I love the chapter for that reason. Kaladin instantly loved this place. Oh, okay. And the state of the men spoke highly of High Marshal Azur. Right. So this is a well-maintained army.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've taken some losses. I think it's coming up here in a bit that they've taken some losses, but they're still laughing.
Right.
He was impressed. Azur had secured the wall, gotten the parchment out of the city, and seen to the defenses of Kolinar. So quite accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Syl is zipping around in the rafters. Soldiers called out questions about the newcomer, the lieutenant who had found him. His name was Noramin, but his men called him Noro. Answered readily, Kaladin was a deserter, and he had a Shash brand, an ugly one. You should see it. Sadius's mark. On a light eyes, no less. The others in the barracks found this curious, but not worrisome. Some even cheered. Kaladin couldn't imagine any force of Dalinar soldiers being so welcoming to a deserter, let alone a dangerous one.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very welcoming army, isn't it?
Yeah,
very tolerant of deserters or outsiders or outliers.
Well, they're living. They're literally living on the edge of disaster, right? Like any day now, that army is going to come for them. And so, like, this is a new person on the wall that gets to spice things up. Maybe a little drama. Look, he's a light eyes and he's got a sash brand. Wow, really interesting. Maybe he'll tell us his story, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, they needed some excitement and some fresh blood in this little squad, I think.
Well, I also think you raise a good point. Like, if you know the army is going to attack and that, you know, your death or doom is imminent, I think a lot of divisions start to dissolve.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're no longer being, you know, so judgmental or you're on high alert with everything. You're much more interested in figuring out what more can you embrace.
Right. Yeah, I've always wondered how, you know, I've always wondered how, even though how shitty it was to probably be in those tunnels and those things in World War One. You know, but those men must have bonded so readily, you know, when you're living in those kinds of conditions.
Right.
And like with imminent death, you know, just around the corner, they must have bonded them so quickly. Like, I don't know. But yeah, it's interesting how they've completely embraced a Kaladin here.
That's interesting that you say bond, considering the bondsmith.
Mm.
Well, it certainly would seem that the bonding is apparent in welcoming Kaladin in, and we do get that when he finally meets Azure.
Yeah.
Men were sharpening their weapons, but he noticed that the weapons had chips in them.
Yeah.
I love these details that he notices. Armorers were repairing the cuts in the leather made by lances in battle. These men had suffered losses, not huge ones, because they could still laugh, but there was tension in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So, Noro says, Shashbrand? He's asking Kaladin. The rest of the squad settled in, and a short man with hair on the backs of his hands set a bowl of thick stew and flatbread in front of Kaladin. And like this guy called Beard.
Yeah, who doesn't have
he's
a beard?
He's got no beard, but he's got the hairy hands. Yeah. I love it. It's great.
Yeah, it's funny.
Lacking flavor but hearty and nutritious was this stew. I had a squabble, Kaladin says, regarding them questioning the Shashbrand.
Mm-hmm.
I had a squabble with High Lord Amaram. I felt he'd gotten some of my men killed needlessly. He disagreed. Amaram, said one of the men. You aim high, friend. I know Amaram, the man with the hairy hands said. I did secret missions for him back in my operative days.
So this guy is a storyteller more than wit, this beard guy.
The hairy hands man?
Yeah. Just wait. Like he's got a story for every moment. Oh yeah, right. I sailed the Reshi Isles. Oh, I did this, I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a man
well,
of a thousand
I,
lives.
You know
this
what?
Guy.
I put a little asterisk over secret missions here in my notes because if I know anything about Mr. Sanderson, that could be just a little drop of something that could come up again with Beard.
Very true.
He's done secret missions with Amaran.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, why so publicly stated if it's going to be anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Best to ignore Beard, Lieutenant Noro says. It's what the rest of us do. Beard didn't have a beard. Maybe the hairy hands were enough. And he nudged Kaladin. It's a good story. I'll tell it to you sometime. Yeah, regarding his time with Amaran.
Yeah.
I hope we get that story. That'd be cool. You can't just brand a light-eyed man a slave, Lieutenant Noro said. You need a High Prince's permission. There's more to this story. There is, Kaladin said. And then he continued eating his stew. Ooh, said a tall member. Mystery. Noro chuckled and waved at the room. So what do you think? You said you weren't going to press me, Kaladin said, between bites. I'm not pressing you, but you won't find a place out there in the city where you'll eat as well as you do in here. Where do you get it? Kaladin asked. And now, so he's asking regarding the supplies,
food.
Right?
Yeah. Like,
right, yeah. He's curious about that, right. You can't use soulcasters. The screamers will come after you. Do you have a stockpile? I'm curious, Sorry, I'm surprised one of the High Lords in this city hasn't tried to appropriate it. Astute, Lieutenant Noro said. That's a guard secret. But in here, there's always a stew bubbling and bread baking. It's my recipe, Beard added. Oh, please, the tall man said. You're a cook now, too, Beard. So he's taking credit for everything?
Oh, yeah,
I did this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
A chef, thank you very much. I learned that flatbread recipe from a horn eater mystic at the top of the mountain. Do you think that's can't be rock, is it?
I mean, maybe, but I don't know. It all depends on whether or not you believe any of these stories from Beard.
Right. The real story is how I got there. Oh, yeah. This is fun. I like this Beard guy.
Yeah.
It's where you landed, obviously, the tall soldier said, after someone in your last squad kicked you. The men started laughing. It felt warm in here, warm and friendly. As Kaladin ate, they gave him some space, chatting among themselves. Noro, he seemed less a soldier and more like a chummy merchant trying to sell you earrings for your beloved. I wondered here if that was just a subtle hint that he wasn't necessarily a soldier.
Don't they say later on in this chapter that, like, the Cal's like, oh, they're probably just a collection of men who had to step up.
Right.
So this guy, Norum, he probably is a tradesman or whatever, and he just had to step up. There was no one else to do it.
Right. Kaladin got a second bowl of stew and settled back into place. He realized something with a shock. They're all light eyes, aren't they? Every person in the room, from the cook to the armorers and the soldiers. The place had felt so natural and so comfortable that he'd assumed that they were all dark-eyed like him. This is, I don't know, like, I think this lesson that Kaladin is experiencing is my highlight, because it's just been, you know, just sweeping judgments of large groups of people, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the great lesson, I think, that multiple characters learn here. Mm-hmm. Kaladin already learned it with the Parshmen.
Yep. And he's learning and it even learning more so here. Within his own people, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this continued lesson for Kaladin or life experience for Kaladin.
Yeah.
I think it's great because not everyone gets to necessarily get there.
No.
with thoughts like this. Right.
Right. Not everyone gets to grow. Right.
Right.
We're all
not
capable of
gets
it.
To, but... Hey, that's interesting. Not everyone gets to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice way to put it. They're all light eyes, aren't they? Every person. Yeah, so comfortable. I really like this. Oh, and then the next little paragraph, I highlighted just people. He knew that most light-eyed soldiers weren't high officers. He'd been told that they were basically just people.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been told it over and over. Somehow sitting in that room made the fact real to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's just people. It's
just
great.
Just people, yeah.
So Cal, Lieutenant Noro asked, what do you think? Maybe re-enlist? Give this another try? Aren't you afraid I'll desert? Kaladin asked. Or worse, that I can't control my temper? I might be dangerous. Not as dangerous as being short-manned, Beard said. You know how to kill people? That's good enough for us. Kaladin nodded. Tell me about your commander. That will be a big part of any group. I only just got into town. Who is this High Marshal Azure? Great question to ask. You can meet him yourself, Beard says. And so there's a misdirection.
Yeah.
You can meet him yourself. I didn't catch it the first time. I'm catching it now with you.
Yeah.
It was a conscious
for sure it is.
Misdirection
for sure it is.
From Beard. Yeah. He does rounds every night around dinner time, checking on each barracks. Yeah, that's funny coming from Beard. Good. Yes, Noro says. Kaladin eyes him. The lieutenant seemed uncomfortable. Ah, so I'm catching more of this in the text, the reread.
Yeah.
Because I just figured it was all just descriptive. And
do you have a theory as to why they lie about it?
I think isn't it because, as Kaladin says, this is highly unusual. There's no female that's ever had a weapon and been in this position, right?
Right.
So it's kind of like, I think it's culturally, it just would not be accepted or understood.
It's easier for these men to lie about it than to accept the fact that their gender roles have been shattered by this woman. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So in order for them to carry on in their roles effectively,
right,
they need to maintain the lie.
Yeah, they need to maintain the secret of hers. They keep saying it's
her
secret or whatever, right?
Secret. Yeah. I didn't really... That's kind of neat that they... Because they... It's like they know the truth.
Right.
But they need to sort of establish this.
Because if not, they're going to think about it all the time, and it's going to drive them nuts, and then it's going to break the spell that is Voronism and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, interesting. I can just hear pattern lies.
They're already great. A bunch of light-eyed men who are the city guard. They're the wall guard, and they normally wouldn't be in this position. They've already broken with like, you know, the social norms that they live in. They can't go that much further. They can't take another fucking step, or they're going to fall into the honor chasm, so to speak. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, this is I like this. I think I'm liking this squad even more. Like this Azure.
Yeah, component. It's really cool. It's really cool. Yeah.
I mean, it'd be cool if it got to the point where it did indeed shatter the cultural norm.
Yeah,
like that would be the next wall to break down. Right? Mm-hmm. Is the lie or the secret is no longer necessary?
Yeah.
Checking the barracks. Yes, Snorro says, and he seemed uncomfortable. The High Marshal, Noro said quickly, is incredible. We lost our former commander during the riots, and Azure led a group who held the wall when the Cult of Moments tried in the chaos to seize the city gates. He fought like a Voidbringer, another squad member said. I was there. We were almost overwhelmed, and then Azure joined us, holding aloft a gleaming shard blade. He rallied our numbers, inspired even the wounded to keep fighting. Storms, it felt like we had Spren at our backs, holding us up, helping us fight. Ooh, it's a big clue.
Yeah, and Cal's like, he narrows his eyes here and he goes, you don't say.
Cal's starting
to be like, sounds like other people I know, myself included. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think at the end of this chapter, he's like, I think we might have found ourselves another Radiant.
Yeah.
Right. So he's starting to see these things, these improbable things.
Right.
You know, look, Shallan and Yasna and Malata and Lyft are women who are higher ranked than probably anyone else in the entire world because they're Radiants.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it kind of makes sense that someone who has something. I mean, this is what Cal thinks. I'll leave it up to you to decide after, like, from reading this chapter, if you think she might be a Radiant from just the stories they tell about her.
Well, I mean, the men are telling this story.
Mm-hmm.
And this story is being backed up by multiple people. It's not just coming from Beard. It's also being corroborated by Lieutenant Noro and this other tall character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I kind of was liking, I think, the first time I read this was... that it was kind of like hearing about Kaladin's story, like Kaladin
a little
was
bit
hearing about a Kaladin.
Yes, it was like it was the stories of Kaladin Stormbless doing the impossible,
right?
Rallying a group of men to be able to fight the good fight. You're totally right, buddy. You're totally right. High Marshal Azure Stormblessed is who we are meeting right now.
Is Kaladin? Yes,
yeah.
That's it.
You're totally right. Yeah, it's awesome. Actually, I love that.
Yeah. Okay, so. Okay, he pried, you don't say. The men here had nothing but praise for Azure. Though the man hadn't displayed any other odd abilities that Kaladin could discover, Azure was a shardbearer, maybe a foreigner, who had been previously unknown to the guard. But with the fall of their commander and the subsequent disappearance of their High Lord, patron at the palace, Azure had ended up in command.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was something else. Something they weren't saying. Kaladin helped himself to a third bowl of stew. Soon there was a disturbance in the door. Sent men standing up. Kaladin followed, turning. A senior officer entered, wearing a glittering chain and a bright tabard, accompanied by attendants. The High Marshal wore an appropriately azure cloak, a lighter shade than the traditional Colan blue. She was also a she.
Hmm.
So that was cool to read. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
And I loved this cloak thing. I love how it evokes, you know, a hero.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I loved it. Like, I loved imagining this entrance. And right up until those sentences, I was imagining, you know, a male of some kind with the cloak. And then the next sentence just changed that instantly in my mind.
We need a hero.
It was great. I loved this little moment. It was great to be under an assumption and then have that altered or changed.
Of whether or not they're misgendering this person on purpose for their own like psychological stability.
Yeah.
They're like, funny. It's like the High Marshal is incredible. Like they worship this person, like you said, Bridge 4 saw Kaladin as Kaladin started surviving when he caught all those arrows on the shield. Like he just kept doing these things that was improbable, and they love him more and more and more. Right. So
that's right.
Yeah. Really great comparison. I think that's my highlight of the chapter so far is you pointing out that Azure seems to have the same kind of beginnings as Kaladin had with his men.
Absolutely.
I love that a lot. That's really
rallying,
awesome.
Keeping them going against impossible odds.
Incredible feats.
Yeah, and not being judged. I mean, I would say Azure's got one up on Kaladin in that she's taking in people that Kaladin may not have wanted to work with.
That's true.
Like
were predisposed to not want to work with her because she was a female, right? Whereas Bridge 4 were all the lowest of the low already.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so there was no social standing there for them to be like, well, don't want to work with him. He's a dark guy or whatever. Yeah. Really interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So Kaladin blinked in surprise. Yeah. at seeing her and even heard a gasp from Syl. The High Marshal.
I love that.
Now, you know what's funny?
I
at first, to be honest with you, I thought maybe Syl was like, oh, she's beautiful. I love her. Like, I was wondering if it was like a gasp of like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This Azure is
she's awesome.
Stunning. She's awesome. I was wondering if it was if Syl was crushing on her.
That's funny.
The High Marshal was of average height for an Alethi woman, maybe just under, and wore her hair short, reaching halfway down her cheeks. I like this. That she's got the short hair. I don't know. I picture her like a little like punky or badass.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm almost thinking of there's a silly reference here for me. What's it now? Wreck-It Ralph.
Like Vanellope.
Not the girl who does the race cars. I think there's another character that belongs to like a battle game that they go into. And
She's
got the blonde.
She's played she's voiced by Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch.
Right. Yeah.
Like I almost picture her a bit like her. Like
She's like the supposed to be like the Gears of War character or whatever.
Yeah.
With the full battle armor and the. Yeah. She ends up dating Fix-It Felix or whatever.
She does.
That's right. I love those movies. They're awesome.
Yeah, I know. They're great.
Yeah.
Anyways, but her, with the short hair and just this, you know, she's super competent. I don't know. Oh, and the other character I was thinking with her, as I always do, I always go to movies, is I think it's called Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise.
Love it.
You know, what's that gal's name?
The actress is...
she's great.
Emily
is her name
Blunt?
Escaping me? Emily Blunt, that's it, yes.
She's the Full Metal Bitch or whatever.
She's...
Remember like, that's her I title her in the movie? Character. I fucking love that movie, man.
She was great. And so that's another character that I think about for this...
Both those characterizations for it, for sure.
Yeah.
I actually think I have a picture of some fan art of what
she
looks like.
I've never seen fan art of her.
I'll look for it. Doing your thing here. I'll look for it.
Okay.
See if I can find it.
All right. Well, so average height for an Alethi woman, hair straight and short, reaching halfway down her cheeks. Her eyes were orange and she wore a side sword with a glistening silver basket hilt. That's cool. Mm-hmm. This wasn't an Alethi design. Was it the aforementioned shard blade? It did have an otherworldly look about it. I thought that was a little subtle hint too, this otherworldly word.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think it's Cosmere? I think it's very purposeful.
Yeah, do you?
Yes.
Okay.
I think for sure that it's very purposeful.
Like he doesn't have an otherworldly look.
He doesn't use those terms unless he means to. Because there are the possibilities of that actually being the case.
Right.
Right.
It's that it's so exciting for me. Like I kind of wish I did read all of this with you chronologically, let's say, in terms of Sanderson's writings.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to admit, it really just kind of being inserted into Stormlight and having just the possibility of all these little connections that could come from future readings.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly exciting. Was it the aforementioned Shardblade? Yeah, it did have an otherworldly look, but why wear it instead of dismissing it? Yeah, I don't know. Why, unless it's different somehow. Or wear it instead of dismiss it. Well, dismiss it means maybe she doesn't have the ability to do so.
Maybe.
Maybe the blade is different somehow. Can a blade just be like summoned and then that's that? It's been summoned?
Normally when you like drop it or whatever, it'll poof out. That's a traditional shard blade. These are blades from the past when the Radiance gave them up. Then they were affixed with these gemstones that can be called and then like summoned and then disbanded, right? And they can do that because of the gem. Remember before we talked about how before they were able to insert these gemstones into these blades, people were just walking around with these giant blades because they couldn't put them anywhere. But they weren't going to put them down because they were so priceless that they just walked around with them.
Well, maybe her sword doesn't have a gemstone.
Right. Right. And she can't poof it away.
She can't poof.
She can't. She doesn't do the poofity poof.
She doesn't do it. Okay.
No.
Regardless, High Marshal was lean and grim and had a couple of serious scars on her face. She wore gloves on both hands. The High Marshal is a woman? Kaladin hissed. We don't talk about the Marshal's secret, Beard said. Secret? It's pretty storm and obvious. We don't talk about the High Marshal's secret, Beard repeated. Hush, all right? Hush about it, Kaladin thinks. This sort of thing simply didn't happen in Vorin society. Not like in the ballads and stories. He'd been in three armies and had never seen a woman holding a weapon. Even the Alethi scouts carried only knives. This is interesting.
And just
to finish that paragraph, he'd half expected a riot when he'd armed Lynn and the others.
Right.
Although for Radiance, Yasna and Shallan had already supplied precedent.
Right.
Yeah, dude, this is...
How hard do you think it would have been for men during the Hundred Years' War to be taking orders from Joan of Arc?
That is a great question.
It must have been incredibly hard for them because they were so used to, you know, women just getting their food for them and bearing their children and not having any worth other than the worth they gave to them. And then here comes this like tactical genius.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she's a woman, but she's a military tactical genius. And you get caught up in it. These men must have got caught up in like, if we follow her, we're going to win every battle.
Mm-hmm.
She's sent from God. Do you know what I mean? This divine purpose. I see Azure a little bit like that. Like these men don't want to break the spell.
Right.
And so they're following her because of all the great things she's done up until this point.
Right.
But like it's, I definitely think she's kind of like a little bit of a Joan of Arc kind of character.
Yeah, that's interesting. I admit I don't know my history that well on Joan of Arc, but I guess my questions would be with regards to that in terms of our history is when did the events take place? How far was it from the Renaissance?
Mm-hmm.
Were these notions of
pre-Renaissance, you know, I think.
Pre-Renaissance, right. So but that's my question is were these sentiments of like shattering norms, and was it bubbling, let's say?
Yeah.
And you know, sort of coming to the surface, and to what extent was this a let's say an admonition, I guess, towards Mary?
Yeah.
You know, and that, so the religion could have played a role in I guess facilitating the
love and respect.
Yeah,
cuz I think that's one
respect,
of the things that she, if I'm remembering my history right, she had visions sent to her by Mary.
Ah, so there
I think
you go.
That Mary was a huge part of it, or at least maybe right. The men who followed her made it so that it was Mary, so that it was
sure.
Like a woman communicating to a woman, as opposed to, because Jesus wouldn't communicate his word to a woman. That's only for priests and all that stuff. But that's a whole other thing. Really
that's
interesting.
Other, but fascinating. I love that you brought that up, though. That's really
another
cool.
Little, just a little side thing here. This mm-hmm. is not a history podcast, but really interesting part of the whole Joan of Arc saga is that mm-hmm. one of her like primary lieutenants, one of the for her very, very most trusted people mm-hmm. was a guy named Gilles de Rais.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like one of the worst serial killers of all time. He used the Hundred Years' War as a cover for his more like vile and violent tendencies. And he like he killed a lot of people and was able to get away with it because of war. So pretty crazy stuff. Yeah.
Jeez, that's horrible.
Okay, let's get back to something fun.
Yeah, let's steer away from that one.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. Azure told the men that they could sit down. One of the men offered her a bowl of stew, and she accepted. The men cheered after she took a bite and complimented the cook.
Mm-hmm.
Again, she went up. She's going up point after point, I find.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, she steps in. She's speaking to everybody, takes a bowl of stew, mm-hmm. compliments the chef. Like, I don't know. My first impression of her is she's great.
She's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so she handed the bowl to one of her attendants. Azure walked to speak with various officers, first the platoon leaders and then the lieutenants. When she stopped at their table, she took a look at Kaladin with a discerning gaze and asked, "Who's the new recruit, Lieutenant Noro?" "This is Cal, sir," Noro said. "Found him haunting the street outside. Deserter with a shash brand. On a light eyes. Storms, man, who did you kill?" "It's not the one that I killed that got me my brands, sir. It's the one I didn't kill. That has the sound of a practiced explanation, soldier." Like her response there.
Yeah.
Practiced explanation.
Yeah.
That's good.
And then Cal just admits it. He's like, yep, that's because it is.
That's because it is practiced.
Yeah, yeah. Because right. We've heard him say that before.
Right.
Yeah.
He couldn't place her age, though the scars probably made her look older than she really was. "Are you joining up?" she said. "We have food for you." "Frankly, sir, I don't know. On one hand, I can't believe nobody cares about my past. On the other, you're obviously desperate, which also makes me reluctant." She turned toward Lieutenant Noro. "You haven't shown him?" "No, sir. We just got some stew in him." "I'll do it. Cal, come with me." Great. I love that. I'm so tickled by this first chapter. It's so great.
Do you want to do me a favor and take a look at the general tab in Discord so you can see the picture that I sent you of High Marshal Azure? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would love to. Okay, hang on. General. Okay. Oh, wow. That's so great. And you know what? Again, like the side part, the punky hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
the
oh,
cool
yeah,
cloak.
I love it.
Yeah.
The cloak, yeah.
We'll be using
dude,
this this picture. I've had this picture saved in my my banks for a while here. That'll be the picture we use for when we release the episode. And
that's great.
It's from the amazing Peter Penev, DNA Venom on Instagram, who he did this for the Stormlight Archive board game that Brotherwise Games came out with, so... It's a beautiful, beautiful piece.
Oh, this is from the board game that I can't play, the one that you have?
Yeah, the one you're not allowed playing until you finish.
I can't see yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I can't wait to play that with you someday.
I haven't played it yet. I've been waiting for you to be able to play
dude,
it.
Really?
I haven't even played it yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Okay, one sec. Okay, there we go. I've got you back. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's so cool. Thanks for sharing that image. That's awesome. I have to admit, I did picture her with the blonde hair-ish kind of thing, lighter hair. But that's okay. But everything else was pretty much exactly how I pictured her, so that's great. okay, so we do get a scene change here.
Yeah.
Whatever they wanted to show him was at the top of the wall. So they hiked up an enclosed stone stairwell. Kaladin wanted to learn more about the supposed secret that Azure was a woman. But when he asked Lieutenant Noro, Lieutenant Noro shook his head quickly and made a hushing motion. We don't talk. This is Fight Club.
This is We Don't Talk About Bruno.
We don't talk about it.
We don't talk about Bruno.
It's Bruno.
Yeah, We don't talk about Azure.
We don't talk about Azure.
It was my wedding day. Oh, sorry.
Assembled atop the fortifications, up they went. The Kolinar Wall was a powerful defensive structure, 60 feet tall at points, with a wide wall walk about 10 feet across, enclosing all of Kolinar. The wall was interrupted by guard towers every 300 feet or so. Azure says, "Guessing from that brand," Azure says to Kaladin, "you were in one of the armies that recruits in the north. You joined up to fight on the Shattered Plains, didn't you? But Sadeus used that army up north to funnel him veterans. Plus, maybe seize some land now and then from rival high princes. You ended up fighting other Alethi, scared farm boys, instead of shipping off to avenge the king. Something like that?" "Something like that," Kaladin admitted.
When we know it's exactly like that. She, literally knows exactly what happened.
"Damnation me if I blame a man for deserting that," Azure says. "I don't hold it against you, soldier." "And the brand?" Azure pointed northward. Night had finally fallen, and in the distance, Kaladin could see a glow. "They advance back into place after each storm," Azure said, "and camp a portion of their army out there. That's good battle sense to prevent us from being resupplied, and to make sure we don't know when they'll attack. Nightmares, Kel, a real Voidbringer army. And if that were an Alethi force, the people in this city wouldn't have much to worry about. Sure, there would be casualties on the wall, but no would-be king of Alethkar is going to burn and pillage the capital. But those aren't Alethi. They're monsters. At best, they'll enslave the entire populace, and at worst..." She let the thought dangle, then looked at him. "Mm-hmm. I'm glad you have a brand. It says you're dangerous, and we have narrow confines up here on the wall. We can't simply press every eligible man. I need real soldiers. Men who know what they're doing." "So that's why I'm here?" Kaladin asked. "To see that?" "I want you to think," Azure says. "I tell the men, this wall guard, this is redemption. If you fight here, nobody will care what you did before. Because they know if we fall, this city and this nation will be no more. Nothing matters except holding this wall when that assault comes. You can go and hide in the city and pray that we are strong enough without you, but if we aren't, you'll be no more than another corpse. Up here, you can fight. Up here, you have a chance. We won't press you. Walk away tonight, lie down, and think about what's coming. Imagine another night when men are up here dying, bleeding for you. Think about how powerless you'll feel if the monsters get in. Then when you come back tomorrow, we'll get you a wall guard patch." It was a potent speech, Kaladin thought. He glanced at Syl, who landed on his shoulder, then took a long look at the lights on the horizon. He's thinking, I love this too, when he looks out. Dude, this is so cinematic.
Yeah. Yeah,
this whole really scene is—it's really good. Mm-hmm. He looks out and he thinks, "Are you there? Are you out there, Saw?" Now, this is a great example of how a novel can convey things that you couldn't pick up in a movie or a series.
Right,
like just having Kaladin look out over the horizon—you wouldn't necessarily get to know that he's thinking about Saw.
Right, right.
Unless you had an inner dialogue.
Right, unless you put inner dialogue, but most. film and TV shows don't do it.
Right.
I think more should do it, but most don't. Dune, the 80s Dune did it.
Yes.
And did it pretty good. Like Paul Atreides's,
yes, thinking.
His inner dialogue was really, really cool, and I loved it.
Yeah, you're right.
But I thought when I first saw it, like, I don't know, when I was an adult, when I was in my 20s or whatever, I had never seen it when I was a kid, but when I saw it as an adult, I was like, this is cool. I like an inner dialogue. But you're right. This whole thing with him just saying, like, are you out there, Saw? Like,
yeah,
he's still thinking about that. Yeah, he's like, are you out there, Saw? Did they bring you and the others here? Like, you know, he's still thinking of that.
Dude, you're getting me goosebumps. Like, what of Saw's little daughter? Like, yeah. I collected, was it now, who had collected flowers and clutched playing cards like a treasured toy?
Yeah.
Was Ken there? The Parsh woman who had demanded Kaladin retain his freedom? Like, I just love that he's looking out there and not seeing or thinking about a dangerous army. He's wondering, are these people out there?
Right. He still has this connection to them. He feels like he let them down. And she just said, this is not an Alethi army. These are monsters. And then he's here on the wall where they're going to fight these monsters, wondering if some of those monsters are out there and if they're doing okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's not necessarily seeing the monsters. They're just people.
Just
like how we used to see the Light Eyes.
Like that line from earlier in the chapter. They're just people.
They're just people.
Fuck, dude. Yeah, that's great.
Dude, isn't that great?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I loved it so much. Okay, winds send that they hadn't been dragged further into this mess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He joined the others in clattering back down the stairwell afterward. Noro and the rest of the squad bade him a happy farewell, as if certain he'd return. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably would, though not for the reasons they assumed.
Mm-hmm.
He went back to the mansion and forced himself to chat with some of the guards at the light-eyed tent, though he learned nothing. And his brands made something of a stir among them. Adolin and Elikar finally emerged. Their illusions were intact. So what was wrong with Kaladin's? The sphere that Shallan gave him was still infused. What do you make of this? This illusion not working on Kaladin?
To be honest, I have no idea.
Even considering Rhythm of War?
I think it has to do with the same thing that happened to him when he tried to get it tattooed over and the tattooing didn't take. It's like he must walk this planet with these scars. Like he is. Remember I said that I always see those scars on the top of his forehead as being the physical representation of the thing that he deals with inside.
Right.
His depression, the thing with the wretch, this demand that he puts on himself to make sure that he's like there protecting everyone, all that inner turmoil. I feel like the scars on his head represent that to him. And he doesn't get to escape that. He doesn't get to put an illusion on and walk around like a normal person. He doesn't get to hide behind a disguise like Shallan does. He doesn't get to put a tattoo on it and say, I'm better now, because he's not better now, because he's always going to deal with this thing that's inside him. And I just feel like that's what it is, right? I feel like he's
the bridge, man.
He's just always carrying the bridge. Yeah, I think he's always going to carry it. And so don't know why technically in the book
the illusion isn't sticking.
Right. But I know that thematically for us as a reader and for the story, he needs to have that on his forehead so that he has to carry around no matter where he goes. You know?
Kaladin gathered Drahi and Scar and then joined the king and Adolin as they started the walk home. What has you so thoughtful, Captain? Elikar asked. I think, Kaladin said, eyes narrowed, I might have found us another Radiant.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Do you think she's a Radiant? Or do you think she's more like Adolin
Kho Lin? I mean,
because Adolin could have... Let's say Adolin Kho Lin is the one who rallied these men. He's got a shard blade. He's got an incredible tactical mind. He could have kept these men alive without having any Radiant powers.
Yes. The only thing that makes me... The only clue, really, that would extend to her being a Radiant is... where are they getting the food and supplies from?
Right.
So that's the one stickler, and it was readily apparent in this chapter. So if that mystery gets solved and points to her abilities, then there you go.
Yeah.
Then she's a Radiant. You know, a Radiant that doesn't dismiss the blade. Okay.
Yeah,
I guess
that's,
so.
That's
maybe
a different thing too. We do have. I do want to make a short list here and say that we have encountered three different types of magical blades so far in this series. Mm-hmm. We have shard blades, actually four technically, four, because we can't forget about our wispy black friend. We've got honor blades, which were given to the heralds by the Almighty, which gives them surges, two surges, right?
Right.
We have Spren, who bond, called the nail bond, with mortals, granting them those surges and can become swords, magical swords, the shard blades.
Right.
We have former shard blades that were given up by Radiance when they broke their oaths, and those Spren technically died, but their corpses, these swords, still exist in the physical realm and allow people to wield them like Adolin does. Right? So Adolin is able to wield a former Spren who was bonded to a former Radiant thousands of years ago, and he can wield that as a shard blade. And because they put, like in ancient times, they put a gem onto that sword, he can dismiss it and then summon it, right? So that's another kind of blade. The last blade, which we don't really know very much about at all, is that blade that was gifted to Zeth at the end of the last book, the one that whispers in his mind.
Right.
Do you want to fight evil today?
Right.
So that's a whole other type of thing altogether that we don't know anything about. So this could be, like you say, a shard blade that has no gem on it and just doesn't get dismissed because it never had that affixed to it.
Right. So let's go through the list then. Could it be an honor blade then?
It could be... because honor blades also don't have the type of gem that would dismiss and stuff. I think if you have an honor blade, I don't know if this is right. I'm sure everyone in Discord is going to correct me after I say this.
Sure.
If you have an honor blade, you can just dismiss it because of you being bonded to it or whatever. I don't think it needs the gem to be able to do so, like a dead shard blade does. Because you can do that with your own shard blade that is a Syl. Cal can just pop it out back in because he's actually making Syl turn into the sword, right?
Yeah. I just had a quick thought when you were running through all that stuff and you mentioned the Spren and the nail bond and all that.
Yeah.
To what extent have we ever talked about Spren being souls of like other beings or something like that? You know what I mean? Like,
I think that statement makes it so that the Spren aren't entities unto themselves, which they are. Them being souls of something else means that they are a part of something else and not their own thing. Does that make sense?
Well, no, but okay. I sort of get that. I mean, them being their own thing is interesting and fantastical. Okay, so and I really do like that.
And they have their own world, which is Shadesmar, and their own cities.
But what I'm wondering is, okay, but what I'm wondering is, if Kaladin dies, or one of these other characters dies, and many of the other characters that have died already in the battles, do they become a Spren somewhere, And is that determined by how they lived, you know, what they were in life, all this kind of stuff?
I guess, I mean, that is a hard question to answer because of the fact that there are so many different types of religions in this world. Mm-hmm. There are many different thoughts on what happens. If you were to take the Voren religion, Vornism mm-hmm. believes that when you die, your soul, if it was worthy and you died well,
right.
you go to the Tranquiline Halls
to fight. Right.
There, so that this way you can right. take back the Tranquiline Halls.
Okay.
So
yeah, so it's probably not a thing here. The Spren are probably separate, but okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just thought maybe
it's cool. Like, I mean, it makes sense. Like, especially when you start thinking of them as like kind of like spiritually, like they're spirits. They come from the spiritual realm, which is Shadesmar. Or no,
yeah,
is Shadesmar the spiritual realm? It might be the cognitive realm. Anyways. There's a lot of words. There's lots of words.
There are a lot. So highlight for this. So yeah. We talk about highlights. Yeah, I mean, I like that whole, you know, I really, really, I like the lesson that Kaladin's learning here, just people, mm-hmm. because he's seeing it in the light eyes. He then, he sees it in light eyes. He sees it in a woman,
mm-hmm.
right? In Azure, like, oh. You're not what I expected. Mm-hmm. So I love that he learns. And then at the very end, when he's staring off at the,
looking
at
for
the army that's encroaching Saw, and he's yeah. having those thoughts about Saw and his mm-hmm. daughter.
Yeah. Cause he's like, already kind of learned that just people thing too before. That's a callback yeah. to his earlier lesson.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a highlight. And then also what you said as well about, what was it now about? Well, I think it was tied in with that. It was tied in with the...
When I declared my highlight to be
the,
was...
Oh, the story of Kaladin.
It was the
Azure
similarity
is
of the legend right. of Stormblessed, right?
Like, that's it. Yeah,
you pointing that out
cool.
is really, really cool. I really mm-hmm. like that. I think I think it's purposeful. But just to piggyback on what you said a second ago, I think Just People would have been a really good title for this, a really good alternate title for
Just
this.
Just so. People. Yeah.
It's really, really great.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Really good chapter.
Great chapter. Okay, so chapter 71,
mm-hmm.
A Sign of Humanity, and a sign it is.
Yeah,
I think.
Can I just quickly just say something here right off the cuff before we go
sure.
get into this? I want us to pay particular attention, and I mean, we're going to not be able to not pay particular attention to it because it's like through this whole chapter. Mm. I absolutely love the way Evie talks about what's going on with Dalinar. It's like this personification of the thrill. And
right.
Just the way that the terms she uses and the way she talks about it, it's almost like Evie knows what's happening with him. It's like she's a reader and she's calling it out like on a pod like we are. She's mm-hmm. telling him, you know, like, you know, monster and like all this stuff. Don't feed it.
I know.
When she says don't feed it, I'm like, oh my God, really? She's saying this right now?
I know. And isn't that great?
I don't think it hit me as hard in previous rereads. But now that we're like really looking at the thrill as this thing that Dalinar's addicted to, like don't feed the addiction, the monster. I really, really love it. It really hits hard for me in this chapter. So,
well, this chapter takes place 11 years ago.
It does.
So a sign of humanity. There weren't enough boats for an amphibious attack on Rathalas, so Dalinar was forced to use a more conventional assault. I love how it's just, I was forced, so I can't do it this way, so I'm forced to do it this way.
Right.
But there's another option, which is, well, maybe you don't do it at all.
Right. Or you could have done both.
But that
you
just
could have
doesn't...
done a little bit of boats and a little bit of, but you're, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He marched down from the west, having sent Adolin back to Kolinar, and assigned Sadeas and his forces to come in from the east. They converged toward the rift. I like, oh man, this is such an epic...
So right off the bat, we hear that Dalinar and Sadeas' forces are separate, and they're coming in from different directions towards Rathalas.
Right.
Which is kind of an important little hint going forward, because it's not like Dalinar will be able to just go and ask him, because their forces are together. They're separate right now, and they're both converging on the city together, like separately.
So what if the other part of this whole thing then, with the betrayal with Sadeas, so Sadeas is posing, or Sadeas is a supposed ally of Tanalan.
Is right? What Tanalan is saying, right?
Right. That's what Tanalan is saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but as I think Dalinar was pointing out at the end of this, it would be great to have an army on the other side
mm-hmm.
coming in from a different vantage point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So could this whole thing be have been planned out by Dalinar and Sadeas and Gavilar? Like, they basically positioned...
It sounds like the original plans to attack Rathalas was mm-hmm. planned out. This whole thing here where Dalinar is now like having to go investigate the men mm-hmm. that were just here that were wearing Sadeas green
mm-hmm.
and that he could be the one supplying them with information and supplies to continue the rebellion. Dalinar is like, well, I'm going to take a group of my elites. At the very end of this chapter, he says, I'm going to take a group of my elites and we're going to figure this out.
We're going to
catch those
out,
men
yeah.
and find out. So,
okay.
So the yeah. plan is going. The plan for them to attack Rathalas is probably made up with Dalinar and Sadeas. But this whole potential betrayal, this whole time,
right?
Dalinar clearly had no idea. He
and
knew,
needs
like
to,
we
and
knew
needs
from
to find out,
right,
right?
And we knew from past chapters that he knew someone. It was thought that potentially someone was helping Tanalan. But they didn't know who. Mm-hmm. And Tanalan is suggesting maybe we did this the entire time so that we could expose who it would have been as a way for him to
right,
save face
right.
kind of thing.
Right. Dalinar spent much of the trip passing through pungent smoke, the trails of it from Evie's incense that she mm-hmm. was burning, from a small censer attached to the carriage, a petition to the heralds to bless her marriage. He often heard her weeping inside the vehicle. This is so sad. She was reading letters, or she read letters, scribed his responses, took notes, met with generals. In every way, she was the perfect Alethi wife, and her unhappiness crushed his soul.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I want to point out a few things here. It's pungent. Well, it's how you look at it. Like, it's like... I feel it's like, you know, he's like smelling like her stink. You know what I mean? It's like it's disgusting to him. He mentions storming woman. Mm-hmm. He also mentions she was the perfect Alethi wife. There's such a conflict here that has gone on for not just in this little POV, but it's been happening all along. Mm-hmm. There's a part of him, and I think it's associated with the thrill.
I think so too.
Is that it's like the thrill is this other, it's almost like venom with Spider-Man. It's like a thing inside of him that is viewing her very badly. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like her scent. I don't want her around me, even though she's perfect.
Yeah. She's trying
she's
to keep me away from battle and the thrill.
She's keeping, right. And it's working. It's characterizing her as awful.
Right.
And you can see this duality, this fight.
Because he does.
I feel.
Her unhappiness does crush his soul.
It crushes his soul because his soul could be good.
Right.
That's the part where he's like, that crushes the part of him that's real. He does sense that Evie is good, mm-hmm. but there's this other thing, this monster that is painting her.
Yeah.
As pungent or
there's
a storming
two
woman
things
or,
going on for sure. He loves so. Her, but he's also
he
resentful
to,
of her for keeping him away or trying to keep him away from the thrill.
From the thrill.
Now that he made yes. that deal with her in the last flashback that we're going to spend at least a year in Kolinar and maybe travel and I'm going to get away from the battle. That's taking him away from the thing he loves the most. Yeah, he loves you, but he loves the thrill the most.
Right.
So,
yeah, I don't know. It's really sad because I of course I'm anticipating a disaster mm-hmm. with Evie.
Right.
Like a, you know, I'm of course as a reader, I don't think that that's a, you know, I would imagine most every reader first time through would come to that conclusion that there's something horrible about to happen with Evie and Dalinar. And so, I mean, it'll be interesting to find out how that ultimately, or end. Who knows if we get it in this book? I don't know.
I'm hoping
we get it.
I can't say too much of what I thought first reading it because I don't want
leading up.
Well, I don't want to say things to you that are like, I thought this, and obviously it wasn't right. Because if you start thinking those things, then I'm denying you the ability to think those things because I'm saying to you they didn't come true. So, yeah, I maybe after we know everything about what happened with this whole situation, we can talk a little bit about, like, you know, what we thought or whatever.
Eventually, they reached the plains around the lake, which was dry. The rock buds drank so fully of the local water supply that they had grown to enormous sizes, taller than a man's waist, with vines as thick as Dalinar's wrist. I like this little paragraph to describe this. It sort of evokes, like, this took place 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the past. And just this idea that sometimes when we look backwards, we see things as more lush or full or better in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
So it seemed to evoke that, like, you're going back in time, things look greener, things look, I don't know, a little more lush
verdant
or flush.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I just, I will always pause for the plants. He rode alongside the carriage, his horse's hooves beating a familiar rhythm, the rhythm of war that's I think, coming. Storming woman, he thinks to himself, but an Alethi would be using this as a ploy to guilt him into bending, but she wasn't Alethi, for all her earnest imitations. Evie was far too genuine, and her tears were real. She sincerely thought their spat back in the Veden Fortress boded ill for their relationship, and that bothered him more than he wanted to admit. So that there it is. Like, he does view her as the perfect Alethi wife, companion, partner. Like,
the difference is duality. That if he was having this fight that they had in Yakaved with an Alethi woman, the Alethi see everything as a contest. So the Alethi woman would be looking for ways to fight back in their relationship.
Right.
Whereas Evie sees that fight as the beginning of the end of their relationship because she's not made of the same stuff as the Alethi women are, right?
No.
They see this as a contest. Oh, you know, I bested him in that conversation. I got from him what I wanted. I'm the victor. Now he needs to fight back. Now it's his turn to come back at me to get something from me. Whereas she's like, yeah, I won that fight, that battle, but this doesn't bode well for a relationship because that's not how relationships are supposed to go. And in truth, she's probably more right than the Alethi way, right?
Yeah, like this whole adversarial way of treating each other is just, Evie's not really, well, again, she's not really an Alethi woman.
No.
She isn't.
Yeah, everything's a contest.
So a young scout jogs up. Gives him a report. The vanguard had secured his desired campground near the city. Tanalan would not abandon the walls around the rift to try to control grounds beyond bowshot. And this was good news. But Dalinar still wanted to snap at the messenger. He wanted to snap at someone. This is the thrill. Like, this is it, right? Like, why did he care so much about Evie's petulance? See these words, you know, pungent, petulance. I almost wish there was more, like...
Well, you're right here, because you said you think that this is the thrill. It was good news, but Dalinar still wanted to snap at the messenger, and he wanted to snap at someone. And then the next line is, Stormfather, this battle couldn't come soon enough.
Right.
Like, when do I get to fight? Right. When do I get to feel it again?
Right.
Right?
Again, like, that's the thing. I mean... I shouldn't say the word obvious, but I think that Dalinar losing control with Evie is, it seems like that's where this is going. I would be delighted if it was slightly different, because then it would be more of a surprise.
Right.
And that would be wonderful.
So you're saying think that the outcome here is that Dalinar will become like violent with her or... Do something like that.
Well, and I wouldn't even say Dalinar at this point. I would say the thrill. Okay. I would say whatever possesses this man to be the Blackthorn. Like, there is evidence enough that this man is conflicted. He wants something different. There's a part of him that really wants something else and not just battle.
Yeah.
And so I find that it would make a lot of sense that, okay, so let's say just with this Tanalan situation with the Rift.
Right.
Okay. There's another thing, the Rift. It's a rift between Dalinar and the Thrill.
But Evie is creating.
It's a separation. Yeah. It's a ripping apart of the Thrill from the Rift is between the Blackthorn and Dalinar.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many ways to look at this. It's crazy. And out of that, let's say this Tanalan situation does not result in war.
Right.
Let's say it doesn't. It actually goes kind of the way that Evie kind of wants it to.
Right.
Look, you spared this man's life once. Please do it again.
Yeah.
Avoid this bloodshed, you know, and sure, do it for me or don't do it for me. Do it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do it for your sons. You know, and if she accomplishes that, or if Dalinar accomplishes that, then I think the Thrill could have like a lashing out, so to speak.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like
I think your Venom metaphor earlier was very apt. Like,
yeah.
Once Peter Parker stops doing what the symbiote wants, it then starts to take control more and more, right?
Right.
I think I always read these chapters as Dalinar just being the Blackthorn. And then this reread with you picking it apart, I really see the distinction between the motivation of Dalinar and how he became the Blackthorn by using the Thrill. I think I saw the Thrill kind of as a separate thing and not really dictating Dalinar's attitude and his choices. I think I saw Dalinar as being, he was a bad dude before. And he also used the Thrill, which everyone else uses too. But I didn't see his personality and his, like, his anger and all that stuff. Just in this chapter here, it's really, that's why I said earlier at the beginning of it, it really hits home for me because I think I understand more now than I did in previous readings. And, you know, us picking it apart with this, you know, addiction metaphor and all that stuff, I think it really, really hits home that he's not just, the Blackthorn wasn't just a bad dude, a warmonger. He was a guy who was addicted to this thing and he would do anything he could to get it. And that meant always fighting, always going to war.
Yeah.
So I really, really appreciate that from this reread here.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so where are we here? Snap at someone, yes. Why did he care so much about Evie's petulance? He'd never let his arguments with Gavilar bother him. He'd actually never let his arguments with Evie bother him this way before either. It was strange. I almost felt here, you should say, it was odd.
It was odd.
If she didn't admire him, he felt that he had somehow failed. See, now that's more evidence. Like, he admires, he values Evie's take on life.
Right.
He values her perspective.
And how she sees him.
Yeah, and how she sees him. That's right.
Yeah.
He values that. Could he really ride into combat feeling like this? No, he couldn't.
Yeah.
Well, then do something about it. He calls to the driver in Evie's carriage to stop. He climbs into the carriage. Evie bit her lip as he sat down across from her. What's wrong? She demanded. I was feeling saddle sore. Well, perhaps you could request a salve. I want to talk, Evie. I'm not actually sore. Oh, she says. Isn't this what you wanted? Dalinar said, looking away from her safe hand, which I guess was uncovered. Her safe hand sleeve displaying her long, elegant fingers. You've been praying nonstop. Yeah, for the heralds to soften your heart. Well, Dalinar says, right. Well, they've done that. Here I am. Let's talk. I kind of believe him here.
Yeah.
Like, softened his heart? Can I go into battle feeling like this? No, I can't. I got to deal with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's wanting to figure this out.
The way he's feeling is an unnecessary distraction before a battle.
Right.
But
well,
she doesn't mean this,
and that's
though.
The other... See, we could look at it another way, too, which is that I need to figure this out so I can get back to battle.
Right.
So we could look at it that way, right. too.
But she's not... She doesn't mean soften his heart to come to her to talk to her. She says, no. Dalinar. I wasn't praying for myself, but for those of your countrymen you right. are planning to kill. I want to soften your heart towards them, not towards me.
Towards them, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to be this man that you are, you know?
The warmonger.
The next little bit yes. here of this conversation is my highlight. I absolutely love it. I think it's really important going forward to understand Dalinar's character. Like this next little bit here.
Yeah, so she says, I wasn't praying for myself, but for your countrymen. And he asks her, the rebels? And she says, men no different from you, who happened to be born in another city. What would you have done had an army come to conquer your home? I'd have fought, Dalinar says, as they will, and the better men will dominate. Well, what gives you the right? My sword. If the Almighty wants us to rule, we'll win. And if he doesn't, then we'll lose. I rather think he wants to see which of us is stronger.
So remember when Dalinar's Ardent was like, listen, if you're saying the Almighty's been dead for a long time and he's not mm-hmm. around, then everything you did unwarranted. Because he's like...
That's right.
The right that I have to do anything that I do is my sword, and the Almighty wants us to rule. And
right.
you can tell because if I win in combat, that means the Almighty's on my side. If I lose, he's not on my side. But
maybe that's is the crushing blow for Dalinar when he's in the drunken stupor leading up to his brother's death, is that like, oh my gosh, now that I know from Gavilar and the Way of Kings that the Almighty's dead. Well, actually, no, because that happened later. His
yeah, he finds out later.
That, right?
He finds that later, yeah.
In Way of Kings. Sorry. I was wondering if that's the thing that like got him like, oh my gosh, all of my...
Everything I did was for naught.
Everything I did was not divinely...
He finds that out. And remember, in the top room, right? That's
right,
the...
Right.
That chapter is titled In the Top Room because it goes
right.
back to the Wandersail story that Wit told us that,
right.
you know, we did all these horrible things because the Emperor told us to, but he's been dead this whole time. So now we
right.
have to really deal with the fact that we were doing it for us, not for a greater
on our
purpose.
Own.
Yeah.
Like we were doing it. Yeah.
On our own. Yeah. Our
so,
own authority.
So that, right.
Yeah.
So that whole thing for me, doesn't work. So his drunken stupor is probably from another reason. And,
right.
And we've already talked about.
Yeah. Still haven't figured out what it was for yet.
Yeah. So, but what I find interesting here is several things. She's saying men no different from you. Again, this echoes mm-hmm. what Kaladin is like.
Just people. Yeah.
Just people.
Yep.
Right. So the lesson is now it's a lesson that Kaladin is having in the present. 11 years ago, Dalinar is getting a bit of this lesson, trying his
Evie's
wife
trying
is
to teach
trying
it to, him.
To
yeah.
reach him on this yep. thing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's awesome. But what I was surprised by was his adherence, let's say, to Vornism, that, you know, if the Almighty wills it, like the Almighty is in charge of my sword,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
I absolve myself of all of this guilt that you are trying to put on me for being a warlord. It's not that way at all. It's quite simply that my sword belongs to the Almighty.
Right.
And whatever my sword accomplishes will be in his favor or because he wills it.
Right. It's right? really convenient when you do bad
it's
things.
Very convenient.
And you say, oh, it's for a greater good, or it's for
right.
a person in the clouds. I did this because God willed it. It's really,
right.
really convenient when you get to pass the buck of
convenient.
Responsibility off to
yeah.
something that is amorphous like that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's metaphysical, and it's then it becomes spiritual, and all there's a whole
well,
other range
of things.
Well,
I think what Evie's trying to tell
in.
Him here is that you have a choice.
Right.
You get to choose.
She's,
how this goes down.
She's trying to bring him into another way of looking at this.
Right.
And it really echoes what I was, or comes to what I've been saying as well with regards to this whole idea of might makes right.
Mm-hmm.
So Dalinar is still thinking might makes right. But again, I put this forth. It's not that. It's might makes.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which is cold and brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the that's what she's trying to say is, look, you're not right about this. There may not be this almighty.
Mm-hmm.
And even if there is, it still doesn't absolve you from your will in this whole thing.
That's
so,
true.
You know, he's very much on the might makes right.
Should we, you know, this has come up a few times now, but should we consider making t-shirts that say Mike makes right? Like, just, you know what I mean?
To
like,
or no, it's Mike, it's Craftmaster Mike makes. He makes things.
He does. I just really love the whole saying of Mike makes, right? Like, because he just does, you know, he's just so great. So should we, if we ever have a full store with full merch stuff, we're going to make a Mike makes right t-shirt for sure.
Mike makes right. Yeah. There you go. They should get, okay, so Merce, okay, if he doesn't, then we'll lose,
mm-hmm.
referring to the Almighty. I rather think he wants to see which of us is stronger. Yeah, so again, Dalinar is making another error, I think, in he's claiming to know things about the Almighty, that the Almighty is actually interested in who is stronger.
Right.
Almost like the Almighty has a box of popcorn and a box of Milk Duds and a big Slurpee or mm-hmm. something, sitting down wanting to see, I wonder between these guys and these guys, who's right. going to win?
Right, exactly.
Like, you're making a lot of assumptions about the Almighty, Dalinar, about that.
Yep, as people do.
And there is no room for mercy, she asks. Ah, it's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy landed us here in the first place, he responds. Ooh, that's a fairly good response.
That is very
considering
good response. Because he did show mercy before.
Right. And then we're right back here with conflict with that person that I could have killed, but didn't.
It is the wrong lesson, but it is true. Everything
what
that's
is?
About to... Well, that if he would have just killed the kid all those years ago, none of what's about to happen was going to happen.
But that's not the point. A Sign of Humanity is the title of the chapter.
I get it. I totally agree that his showing mercy back then was the right thing. And then him trying to settle this, as he's about to do here with Tanalan, without violence, is also the right thing. But... if we
Correct.
Want to take a look back and see a fulcrum point, a point where, you know, a pivot point where things, the TSN turning point, the Sports Center turning point of the game is when he let that boy live.
Now, you can look at it that way. And then, of course, you can look at it another way, which is he showed goodness and a sign of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you do that doesn't mean just because you did something good or used principles, values, morals, ethics, whatever you want to call it. And it leads to further conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I would propose is, were you so naive to think that because you did one good thing that there would be no future further conflicts?
Right.
Conflict is baked into existence.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be an adversarial component to the future as we experience time.
Right.
So... what matters, though, is that when you are confronted with each and every one of those conflicts that come with life.
Making the choice over and over again.
Right. What are you going to do and how are you going to do it?
Right.
Right. See which one of us is stronger and there is no room for mercy. Well, that's what got us into this place in the first place. If they don't want to fight, they should give in to our rule. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But she looks down, hands in her lap. I'm sorry, I don't want another argument. I do, Dalinar said. I like it when you stand up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when you fight. So this for me is a bit of a conflict here in terms of a line out of him, because does he want her to fight because he's admiring that part of her, like he sees himself in her,
mm-hmm.
that she's fighting back? Or is it that he wants this fight, like the thrill wants it, and wants to have this argument or whatever?
I think it's
like,
probably more along the lines that an Alethi woman would fight back.
Right.
Right? They
Which
wouldn't
is what
be
he would expect.
Like meek or whatever and like just kind of like lay down. They would fight back. If this was Navani, Navani would be arguing
right.
just as hard yeah. back, putting right. him in his place, right? And he right. he wants that, I think. Not to bring
yeah,
Navani
you know
into it, but you know what I mean?
No, like, but I like the way you saw through his cultural eyes
mm-hmm.
that's the way he would view her, even though she's not Alethi,
right.
but he would be expecting that from an
right.
from the Alethi woman experience, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
She blinked tears and looked away. Evie, he says, I hate what this does to you, she said softly. I see beauty in you, Dalinar Colan. I see a great man. Oh, and I want to bring up something here, because I had a theory about this.
Mm-hmm.
I see beauty in you, she's crying. She's the mother of Renarin.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Renarin is a truth watcher.
So she's seen
right?
the truth of him, is what you're... Like the yeah. thematicness of the themes of it or whatever?
Yeah,
like the...
that she can see ahead and sees the future and sees, like, I don't know, like a vision or something. I was like, getting goosebumps as I was reading this. I'm like, wow, like, she might be more like Renarin, you know? Like,
right.
more... I don't know. I was thinking that. I don't know if it's real or true, but I see a great man struggling against a terrible one.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get this look in your eyes, a horrible, terrifying nothingness, like you have become a creature with no heart, feasting upon souls to fill that void and dragging Painspren in your wake. This, Sean, I love dragging Painspren, almost like the Spren don't even want it.
Yeah.
It's like Dalinar is
like
doing violence
too tired
and harm.
Of the pain, but he's dragging
yeah.
them with him. Yeah.
He's like, you will express, he's bringing the Spren in involuntarily almost. You know, like,
it's a bunch of spray pain Spren rolling their eyes. Oh, not this dude again.
Yeah.
I really love this paragraph.
It haunts
me, horrible,
Dalinar.
Terrible, terrifying nothingness. Like,
yeah.
It's like they're describing the nothing in friggin' Neverending Story, you know? You've become a creature with no heart, feasting upon souls to fill that void. Oh my God. Evie's just
yeah.
on the ball right now.
She's nailing.
Yeah.
He's kind of in, I feel like he's in shock a little bit. What did that even mean? He asks
yeah.
himself. A look in his eyes? Was this like when she'd claimed that people stored bad memories in their skin and needed to rub them off with a stone once a month? Westerners had some curiously superstitious beliefs.
It's so funny because he's like putting it off as her being a silly irreality
yep.
again.
Right.
You know, but she sees the truth of him. She sees right into his heart
right.
that there is something behind your eyes. There is a monster in you.
Yeah.
There's this monster that you are, that you've become. Well, you know?
Right.
And
right.
he's all like, oh, don't be so silly, though, your superstitions.
I know. It's like he has to do that in order to win.
Well,
he also
has to do that to not admit the truth.
Right.
Right?
Not face the mirror. Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you have me do, Evie? He asks. Have I won again? She said. Another battle where I've bloodied you? No, I need to know what you want, so I can understand. Don't kill today. Hold back the monster.
Yeah.
And the rebels? And their Bright Lord? Well, you spared that boy's life once before. Yes, and it was an obvious mistake. No, it was a sign of humanity, Dalinar. You asked what I want. It is foolish, and I can see there is trouble here that you have a duty, but I do not wish to see you kill. Do not feed it.
Do not feed it. Like, it is in, like, italics here. It's just...
I know.
It's so good, man. It is so good.
I know. It's really the stuff of, like, it's like a Stephen King novel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this thing that's attached
it.
To him, this
yeah.
parasite. Yeah, it's the stuff of horror, really.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
He rested his hand. Well, you know, and to be honest with you, describing it, you know, the like the thrill, it is like a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he's poisoned by vampirism.
Yeah, he's like he's got like some kind of disease, a curse, bloodlust. Whatever. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. There's something there for sure.
He rested his hands on hers. Eventually, the carriage slowed again, and Dalinar stepped out to survey an open area. The vanguard waited here. It was 5,000 strong, assembled in perfect ranks. Taleb did like to put on a good show. Across the field, outside of Bowshot, a wall broke the landscape. Nothing to protect. The city was hidden in the rift in the stone. From the southwest, a breeze off the lake brought the fecund scent of weeds and creme. Taleb strode up, wearing his plate. Well, Adolin's plate. Evie's plate.
I don't know what if there's like a deeper meaning there, but I just like the way that it's laid out. Like he's getting ready to go out battle. Yeah, that's Adolin's plate. Oh yeah, it's actually Evie's plate because she brought
from
it
from her brother, right?
Yeah, she brought it from home. And I think it's like another reminder of her, like, you know, this right. thing isn't done yet.
Brightlord, Taleb says, a short time ago, a large guarded caravan left the rift. We hadn't the men to besiege the city, and you had ordered us not to engage. So I sent a scout team to tail them, men who know the area, but otherwise let the caravan escape. You did well, Dalinar said. Though I'd have liked to know who was bringing supplies to the rift. That might have been an attempt to draw you away into a skirmish. However, gather the vanguard now and bring them in behind me. Pass the word to the rest of the men and have them form ranks just in case. Sir, you don't want the rest of the army before... Sorry, you don't want to rest the army before attacking? Dalinar swung into the saddle, rode past him at a trot, heading toward the rift. So he doesn't even answer that question.
No.
He just rides off.
Mm-hmm.
Taleb, usually unflappable, shouted orders and hurried to the vanguard. Dalinar made sure not to get too far ahead. He approached the walls of Rathalas, where the rebels had gathered, primarily archers. They wouldn't be expecting an attack so soon, but of course Dalinar wouldn't camp for long outside either, not exposed to the storms. Do not feed it. So he's thinking about her. Her words are with him. I love Evie's effect on him. You know what? Dalinar I have to give him that. In matters of love, when he connects with someone, he's affected by the people that he's around.
Mm-hmm.
So Evie has had an effect. Navani has had an effect.
Right.
So he's really not this. He's really not Darth Vader.
No. He's not this like, he really emotionless isn't. Void. He does have. He has emotions. Strong emotions.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, he's a really interesting mix of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Do not feed it. Did she know that he considered this hunger inside of him, the bloodlust, to be something strangely external? A companion. See, there you go. Mm-hmm. Strangely external, like other. A companion. Many of his officers felt the same. It was natural. You went to war. And the thrill was your reward.
That is a line that stuck with me big time. You went to war and your reward was the thrill.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder. I actually wrote to the group in Discord. I'm like, is all of Alethi recorded history of warmongering because of this? Is this the reason why the Alethi culture have become known as warmongers? Because they just constantly need to fight to feel the thrill?
They're just addicted to this.
Yeah. Like they're infighting all the time. They're always trying to fight Yakaved and her dad. They're always fighting. And are they always fighting because they just constantly want to feel the thrill?
That could be it.
Like, are we thinking
culturally,
like
that's
thousands
it?
And thousands of years? Do you know what I mean? I know that one of the guys on Discord said that Alethala, when it was like the old Silver Epoch Kingdom, they said that we fight so that no one else needs to. Right? That they were like that their Knights Radiance and their warriors fought so that other nations didn't need to fight. They took the burden, which is a very honorable way to look at it.
Sure.
But when did it become, we will fight for the greater good for everyone else to not have to fight, and we will just fight and fight and fight no matter what.
Right,
even in peacetime, right. We will find reasons to fight.
It, right.
That ideal of we'll fight for the greater good so that none other needs to fight has become corrupted and skewed over time. And now the Alethi have this, you know, reputation of just constant fighting and battle. So I wonder just how much of that has to do with the thrill.
I think you're right. I think the connection to the thrill has become such an intrinsic part of their culture
mm-hmm.
that they don't even realize it.
Yeah. You know, they say and that the... go ahead.
Well, just that even in terms of the adversarial component between their relationships, between, you know, partners, like these verbal battles mm-hmm. that take place, it's almost like it's just miniature spikes of the thrill.
Yeah.
You know, you're just keeping this whole thing going. I would love that there could be more of a personification of the thrill.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is capitalized.
Yep. And we know that the thrill is a side effect of, is it Moloch or is it Nergal? It's one of those two unmade. One of them
unmade.
Is the death, makes the death rattles happen, and the other one makes the thrill happen. So just like whatever's happening in Kolinar right now, because the heart of the revel is doing something to the people there, and just like Ra's Shaffir was affecting people in Urithiru.
So maybe that's a great confrontation to come.
Maybe.
That would be really interesting to break free from the thrill for Dalinar in like a real, not, I shouldn't say real, but anyways, just, I was, you know, just, it's not necessary to personify the thrill,
mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, in a fantasy series, it could be a great tool for.
Yeah, we do know that it is an effect of one of the unmade, so.
Right. Okay, so you want me to rest my army before attacking? Do not feed it. Okay, Dalinar's armorers arrived. Right, I like this. He steps off his horse and they get him his boots and breastplate and other sections of armor.
Mm-hmm.
Wait here, he says, and he climbs back on his horse. He walks out onto the killing field, summoning his shard blade and resting it on his shoulder. Years had passed since his last assault in the rift,
mm-hmm.
and he imagined Gavilar racing ahead of him, Sadius cursing from behind him, demanding prudence. See, it's all of this kind of connective tissue that I kind of was missing,
mm-hmm.
you know, to feel more this potential betrayal of Sadius, which I'm not even sure if it's going to be mm-hmm. that. But any closer and those archers were likely to start shooting. And he stands there for about 30 minutes before mm-hmm. the gates finally open.
Yeah.
And a company of infantrymen pour out, two men on horseback. Dalinar dismissed the bald one who had a purple birthmark across half of his face. He was too old to be the boy that he had spared. It had to be the younger one riding the white steed, cape streaming behind him. And again, we have the cape, the white steed.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the boy's on the right side of things.
Yeah.
Tanlan's on the right side. Oh, whoops. Hang on.
It's okay.
Sorry.
Had a little phone mishap there.
Yeah.
But you're right.
That's
the boy's being painted as like kind of like in the right here and the Blackthorn in the wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so about 30 minutes, comes out. He believes that the one that he spared is on the white steed. And the way that this boy was staring at him, or this young man now, he stared at him with daggers in his eyes. The son of the old Tanalan, whom Dalinar had bested after falling down into the rift. Yeah, that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
The wooden bridges and the fight across wooden bridges and then in a garden suspended from the side of the chasm.
It was a really awesome fight. They set up that trap for him and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
The group stopped about 50 feet from Dalinar. Have you come to parley? Called the man with the birthmark. Dalinar walked his horse a little closer. Dalinar inspected them. You've done well here. polemen on the walls to push me off should I come in alone. Netting draped down at the top, which you can cut free to entangle me. What do you want, tyrant? Danelan snapped. Dalinar dismissed his blade and swung free of his horse, plate grinding on the stone as he hit the ground. Oh, man, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Walk with me a moment, he says, Brightlord. I promised not to harm you unless I'm attacked first. I'm supposed to take your word. Exactly. Like, yeah. You know, this is it. You know, it's impossible. You can't possibly gain trust in a moment after being the Blackthorn, a warlord. Like, you can't.
Dalinar has a good rebuttal here, though, because he's like,
what did I do the last time we were together?
I spared you before.
Right.
Kind of thing, right?
When I had you in my hand, how did I act? You robbed me.
Right.
And? Dalinar asked, meeting the younger man's violet eyes. Tanelan measured him, tapping one finger against his saddle, and finally dismounted. I don't see what you hope to accomplish here, Blackthorn. We have nothing to say to one another. What do I want to accomplish? Dalinar said, musing. I'm not certain. My brother is normally the talker. Your troops look good, Dalinar says. Brave, arrayed against a stronger force, yet determined. Well, they have strong motivation, Blackthorn. You murdered many of their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
It will be a pity to destroy them in turn. Assuming that you can, says Tanelan.
Mm-hmm.
Have I ever lost a battle, Tanelan? Dalinar asks. You know my reputation. Do you think it exaggerated? The younger man shifted, looking over his shoulder toward where he had left his guards. Better to die trying to bring you down than to surrender. You'd better be sure of that, Dalinar says. Because if I win here, I'm going to have to make an example. I'll break you, Tanelan. Your worry, weeping city will be held up before all who would defy my brother. Be absolutely certain you want to fight me. Because once this starts, I will be forced to leave only widows and corpses to populate the rift.
Jeez, Louise.
So I will say one thing about this speech with Tanelan.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing Dalinar.
No?
No. This is the Blackthorn. This is the thrill.
Well, he keeps being called
This conversation right? is harsh.
Yeah.
Like Evie's conversation with him just prior, it's not present here.
I think it sort of is. And I'll say, because I think what he's doing here is he's trying to really pull off a supreme
intimidation check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is trying to say, I will literally kill all of you fucks.
All of you.
Your whole fucking place is going to go down. There will only be widows and corpses left. But there's a way out of this. You can save all of their lives.
Right.
You know? Because he is trying to not fight. He is trying to do what Evie said. If I can intimidate him strong enough, and maybe he can give up. Right?
Yeah.
But Tanelan doesn't want to give up because he has to save face. How is he going to be a leader if he just bows down to Dalinar, right? That's why he comes up with this little trickery here. But
I think he somewhat succeeds, as you say, with this intimidation check, because mm-hmm. the next line, all that Tanelan can get out is I with an ellipsis.
Mm-hmm.
Like after him saying, I'm going to leave widows and corpses, he's just like, and then, and Dalinar continues and says, my brother attempted words and politics to bring you into line.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm good at only one thing. He builds and I destroy.
Fuck. That's a good line, dude. That's a good line.
It's so good. But because of the tears of a good woman, I have come against my better judgment to offer you an alternative. Let's find an accommodation that will spare your city. An accommodation? You killed my father. And someday a man will kill me. And my sons will curse his name as you curse mine. I hope they don't throw away thousands of lives in a hopeless battle because of that grudge. You want vengeance? Fine, let's duel. Me and you. I'll lend you a blade and plate and we'll face each other on equal grounds. I win? And your people surrender. And if I beat you, will your armies leave? Hardly, Dalinar said. I suspect they'll fight harder, but they won't have me. and you'll have won your father's blade back. Who knows, maybe you'll defeat the army. You'll have a better storming chance, at least. This is a really honest answer I found from Dalinar.
He could have lied and been like, yeah, of course
we'll
surrender.
Is my army going to retreat? Right. He didn't.
No.
He didn't.
Fuck no, they won't. They're going to fight even harder.
Right.
Right.
But you won't have me.
But you won't have to fight me in the war.
Wow.
And we know that Dalinar is like a whole platoon of men unto himself.
Do you think that there's a part of Dalinar, like when you get to this point in battle, like, because he's just offering up, like, you know, if you beat me, then so what? Like, do you think some of his personality or his take on things is kind of like, look, if I die, then it's over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's why he's so, like, it wouldn't matter either way.
I think it also has to do with their Vorin religion. Because if I die in battle, guess what? I get to keep fighting at the Tranquiline Halls.
Right.
I get rewarded for my death in battle with more battle. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, you're right.
It's all baked into their whole thing, right?
There's no way to lose. You can't lose.
Yeah, there is no lose. Yeah,
it's Ferris all baked
Bueller,
in.
Bueller can't lose. Or no, what's his, it's not Ferris Bueller can't lose. It's, what was the cheesy version of that? It's Parker something can't lose. Remember? There was a TV show back in
I'm
the
I'm drawing a blank.
80s?
I'm drawing a blank.
Anyways, never mind.
Okay, so you aren't the man. Well, Tantalan responds to this. You aren't the man I thought you were. I'm the same man I've always been, but today that man doesn't want to kill anyone. A sudden fire inside of him raged against those words. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, dude.
That's it, exactly. Was he really going to such lengths to avoid the conflict that he'd been anticipating? One of your own is working against you, Tantalan said suddenly. The loyal High Princess? There's a traitor among them. I'd be surprised if there weren't several, Dalinar says, but yes, we know that one has been working with you. Oh, so he admits that he knows that there's one.
Right. Well, they had suspected before, right? Like we...
Right.
Dalinar, or Gavilar, when he wrote him that letter, the last one
That's
said
right.
so, right? So they knew that something was up.
A pity, Tantalan says. His men were here not an hour ago, a little earlier, and you'd have caught them. Maybe they'd have been forced to join me, and their master would have been pulled into the war. He shook his head and then turned and walked back toward his advisors. Dalinar sighed. A dismissal. He walked back to his horse and pulled himself up into the saddle. Tantalan mounted as well. This is unfortunate, he said. But I see no other way. I cannot defeat you in a duel, Blackthorn. To try would be foolish. But your offer is appreciated. Dalinar grunted and pulled on his helm, then turned his horse. Unless, Tantalan said. Unless, Dalinar responds. Unless, of course, this was really a ruse all along. A scheme arranged by your brother, you and me. Tantalan said. A false rebellion? Intended to trick disloyal high princes into revealing themselves? Dalinar raised his faceplate and turned back.
This is very Alethi. Right? Coming up with a
Don't
scheme like this... to expose things, like doing things kind of backhanded like this, very Alethi. Mm-hmm. It's very, very cool.
Perhaps my outrage was feigned, Tantalan says. Perhaps we have been in touch since your attack here, all those years ago. You did spare my life, after all. Yes, Dalinar said, feeling a sudden surge of excitement. That would explain why Gavilar didn't immediately send our armies against you. We were in collusion all along. What better proof than the fact that we just had this strange battlefield conversation? Tantalan looked over his shoulder at the body of his men on the wall. My men must be thinking it very odd. It will make sense when they hear the truth that I was telling you about the envoy that had been here delivering weapons and supplies to us from one of your secret enemies. Your reward, of course, Dalinar said, would be legitimacy as a High Lord in the kingdom, perhaps that High Prince's place.
Mm-hmm.
And no fighting today, Tantalan said. No deaths. No deaths. Except perhaps for the actual traitors. Tanalan looked to his advisors. They headed east toward the unclaimed hills, Tanalan said. 100 soldiers and caravaneers. I think they were planning to stay for the night in the way stop at a town called Videliar. Who was it? Dalinar asked. Which High Prince? Must be best if you find... I think it might be best if you find out for yourself. Who? Dalinar demanded. Bright Lord Toral Sadius.
Did your heart drop when you read it?
No, because I didn't expect it, but at the same time, I think I did.
You said it a couple of episodes ago.
I said it a few episodes ago.
And I did that silly thing where I like tried to dissuade you of it because I forgot about this. I literally legit forgot about this.
So I, you know, my problem is that I'm saying so many things all the time that I forget. I forget what I've said.
Say so much shit.
I do. I'm just spewing out so much crap. So for me, like this was, it was a surprise, but also not because of what we know about Sadius from the previous two books. I mean, come on.
Oh, dude.
Sadius cannot be trusted.
No, he can't.
He just can't.
You know what he has done? Is he's proven that he can betray people and then still remain in his power.
Right.
You know, he's very politically deft. So he could have pulled this off and then still been a high prince. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Sean, it looks like he is pulling this off right now.
Right.
And we know
he still
that
stays
he goes on.
High prince. He's still, he's still Gavilar's advisor.
Like it's incredible. So
yeah.
I couldn't be more curious as to how this plays out.
Right.
I you know, it's fascinating to me.
I love you so much, bro.
Like how
I
Dalinar
say so much
can,
stuff that I can't, I can't keep it all together.
I can't
so
keep
funny.
It together. So
it's
so when funny. You remind me, like you'll be like, oh, you said this a few episodes ago. I'll be like,
did I?
I guess so.
I guess it's on record. So yeah,
it's on record.
Yeah,
okay.
That's really funny.
So Sadius, and you know what's going to bother me so much is the staying of Dalinar's sword.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't follow through in any kind of meaningful way to get rid of Sadius. That's not what happens.
How do you know?
Well, because we have Sadius in the future.
It means that Sadius isn't dead and he doesn't die. And somehow he saves face. And somehow he's able to worm his way back into the good graces of King Gavilar. We don't know what's about to happen. Just because Sadius is alive was alive in the future doesn't mean that it dictates anything that's about to happen.
Well, I don't know. I think it does, but... Okay. Well, I'm going to be surprised if it's like, you know, that Dalinar stays his sword, if you will, for Sadius, but doesn't end up staying it for Tanalan.
Right.
Do we know that Tanalan survives from previous?
We have no idea.
We don't know.
He's never mentioned.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No, I know. But that it's a bit of a clue. It's a bit of a hint. Okay. He shook his head and walked away toward... Where are we here?
Sadius. Impossible.
Impossible, right. As I said, Tanalan noted, best if you see it for yourself. But I will testify before the king, assuming you keep your side of our accord. Open your gates to my men. Stand down your soldiers. You have my word of honor for your safety. See, again, I find it so rich that he can ask for these things. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not doing that. Like, no.
Yeah.
You know? With that, he turned and trotted back toward his forces. Taleb ran up to meet him. Bright Lord, he said, my scouts have returned from surveying that caravan. Surit, it was from a high prince. Undoubtedly. They couldn't determine which one, but they claim to have seen someone in Shardplate among them. Shardplate? That made no sense. Unless that is how he's planning to see what that we lose, Dalinar thought. That might not have been a simple supply caravan. It could be a flanking force in disguise. A single shardbearer hitting the back of his enemy while it was distracted, could do incredible damage.
To his army.
Dalinar didn't believe. What's that?
It's a single shardbearer hitting the back of his army.
Right. Dalinar didn't believe Tanalan, not completely. Storms, if Sadeas secretly had sent one of his shardbearers to the battlefield, Dalinar couldn't just send a simple team of soldiers to deal with him. You have to command, he says to Taleb. Tanalan is going to stand down. Have the vanguard join the locals on the fortifications, but do not displace them. Camp the rest of the army back in the field and keep our officers out of Rathalas. This isn't a surrender. We're going to pretend that he was on our side all along, so he can save face and preserve his title. Horanar, I want a company of 100 elites, our fastest, ready to march with me immediately. They obeyed, asking no questions. One person stood still in the midst of it, hands clasped hopefully at her breast. What happened? Evie asked as he trotted his horse toward her. Go back to our camp and compose a message to my brother saying that we may have brought the rift to our side without bloodshed. He paused and then added, tell him not to trust anyone. One of our closest allies may have betrayed us. I'm going to find out.
Mm-hmm. Great chapter. It's so good. I love it.
Dude.
I really do apologize for not remembering that Sadeas was involved in this. I wish I would have let you just cook a little longer and like been like, you know, I felt like I stymied your creative process. So,
what do you think about this whole idea that Dalinar is saying? Like, what if Sadeas, like, he's not just accepting what Tanalan says at
right.
face value.
Exactly.
So he's thinking about, okay, look, it could be that Tanalan's right.
Right.
Tanalan is not lying. He's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Sadeas has betrayed us for what reason? We don't really know. Mm-hmm. What's Sadeas's play here? I don't know. But it could be that Sadeas is doing his own thing, providing an advantage, and that doing his own thing required Dalinar's ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe only Gavilar knows.
Maybe. This could literally be a plan between Sadeas and Gavilar, and they're keeping Dalinar
right.
out of the loop. Like you said
right.
earlier, and it could be a trap for Dalinar.
Well, I thought that theory of mine was a little crazy. That's why
it
I
is a little
to,
crazy, but it's still.
Bring it up.
But right now, everything's on the table because we don't really know anything yet. And Gavilar,
right.
Dalinar is but on it, his way to find out.
Right, he's on his way to find out. But it could be that when Evie writes this letter back to Gavilar,
mm-hmm.
Gavilar could confirm that Dalinar is right, that Sadeas is positioning himself in behind the enemy. And they're still going to attack.
Right. Right.
I mean, so that could be the response back from Gavilar.
I guess we'll just have to wait and find out.
I guess so.
So what's your highlight here?
Highlight for this chapter? I don't know. Evie, I think my highlight is this in the language here. It's been in other chapters as well, but just the thrill, this way of looking at her ill-favored. It seems to be building up, you know, like, and again, I go back to that comment where if this situation at Rathalas is actually put down, meaning no bloodshed,
mm-hmm.
then I think that what it's going to do is it's like a volcano erupting and the thrill or the Blackthorn is going to take it out on Evie.
Right. Like it's a him being able to fight is like a geyser letting off steam, but if you plug all the holes, at some point something bad's gonna happen.
Bad's gonna happen because he's not ready. He hasn't made that. But again, maybe this is it. Maybe it's the tragedy of what happens with Evie that is the catalyst that allows Dalinar to break away from the Blackthorn.
Mm.
Like maybe it took that to accomplish it. Otherwise it wouldn't have happened.
Right. Well, we know in the present, or in the past, but not the distant past, but the not too distant past, when he's on the Shattered Plains, we know that he still is using the thrill.
The thrill.
And he has that moment where he ends up throwing up on in the battle, and it disgusts him to use it, so he stops using it then. But we know that he didn't necessarily completely stop using it, so...
No. No, that's a fair point.
My highlight is obviously, you know, just expanding on what you just said, it's the way Evie is able to put into words the way that we've been talking about the thrill. Don't feed it. Don't let the monster win.
Oh,
don't like
that's so good.
Yeah, all that paragraph where she explains like you are filling the taking souls and putting it into this void and dragging pain sprint in your wake. Yeah, like it really exemplifies what the Blackthorn is in this moment and like what has become of this man. You know, there's two men. There's a good man and there's a terrible man, and they both live inside of him. I just really love all of that. The Evie is like wins this chapter. I think she's amazing.
Oh yeah, no, hands down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of Evie.
Yeah, me too. I'm an Evie head. so let's get to the info dump. Buzzkill Joe for doing all the work for us on the info dump.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna start with chapter 70, High Marshal Azure. So we meet Norman, who everyone calls Noro. He's a seemed like less of a soldier and more like a merchant. Then there's Beard, who is a short, light-eyed man, but doesn't actually have a beard, and he seems to tell these tall tales. High Marshal Azure is wearing an appropriately azure cloak. The blue cloak is lighter than the traditional Colan blue. She is an average height for Nalathi, maybe just under, and wore her hair straight and short. Her eyes are orange, so she's technically light eyes, but that might not necessarily mean anything. Her blade, a side sword with a glistening silver basket hilt, it wasn't a Lethi design. Was it aforementioned a shard blade? It had an otherworldly look about the blade, which he pointed out, which is really great. One of the things that I'm going to tell you here is that Buzzkill Joe makes a point of saying there is only one other blade that seems to be special but doesn't get dismissed in the books right now, and it's Zeth's new blade. The one that we talked about earlier, the one that talks to him.
Right.
So, light-eyed slave branding. Light eyes are just not branded as slaves. You needed the actual High Princess permission to do so, which is, speaks a lot of how little they see the dark-eyed men, because they can just brand them willy-nilly, but light-eyed men need actual permission to be branded from their High Prince. And, that's it for chapter 70. 71. A sign of humanity. We have Tanalan's advisor. Hornar is one of Dalinar's officers. And Vedliar is a little way stop near Rathalos where Dalinar is heading to go meet those men, that caravan of men.
To confirm the betrayal.
Yeah, exactly. He says here, a marriage blessing. Evie burns incense and glyph wards and a censer attached to her carriage in a petition to the heralds to bless her marriage. And Alethi would be using this as a ploy to guilt him into bending. So she's just doing it for the good of them. And Dalinar is saying that an Alethi would be doing this as a way to fight back kind of thing. It's funny, he says here, claim that people stored bad memories in their skin and needed to rub them off with a stone once a month. Westerners refer to Rira and Eri, they're Westerners to the Alethi. The Shin view stone as sacred, only forbidden from walking on it, so it may be used to rub on skin. Even though the Irali and the Eerie are the Rira and the Irali are a little bit different than the Shin, but there's some rock stone stuff there. And he mentions that the Rathalos region has these rock buds. Eventually, they reach the plains around the lake, crossing the riverbed, which was dry except for storms. The rock buds drank so fully of the local rot water, they'd grown to enormous sizes. Some were taller than a man's waist, and the vines produced were as thick as Dalinar's wrist, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So Rathalos seems to have a more lush... and you're like saying it's things seemed lush in the past is what you, your comment was. And, he's pointing out that it could just be Rathalos itself just has really good irrigation. And so things grow more, lushly over there. Okay, so yeah, that's all we have here. He had another thing back on the bottom, but something I can't tell you, so I just skipped it. So yeah, thank you very much to Buzzkill Joe for all the hard work. We really appreciate you, and thank you very much. So yeah, if you guys want to be part of the Patreon team, you can go to patreon.com/heroesof. We have not one, but two live reads coming up in the end of part three.
Hang on. We're not at the end of part three, are we?
We are not. We are quickly approaching the end of part three. And before the end of part three, we're not going to have one, but we're going to have two live reads coming up.
Wow.
So if you want to be part of that, you can go to patreon.com/heroesof. You can get the Discord link, and you will be able to be on the live chat with us while Jack drops his jaw, shows his arm for goosebumps, all the different things that Jack does on the video version of this. So quickly go sign up. Time's running out for those live reads. If you want to reach us, you can do so at heroesofcathra@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter. Yes, I still call it Twitter. I haven't updated my feed, so it's still I still get the blue bird. You can do so at Heroes of One. You can hit us up on Instagram at the Storm Pod, or check us out on the subreddit or the Facebook page of the Storm Pod. So, yeah, we... are rocking and rolling here, bro.
Are we doing two more chapters?
We're going to do two more chapters, the next two. So 73, 74, 72, 73.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we're going to do them tomorrow. So we're going to be able to do like back-to-back pods here. This might be really fun.
I hope we can pull that off.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So anyways, everyone, thank you very much for listening to the show. We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.